You're listening to the Midwest Indie Media Center podcast, featuring the news, views, and opinions of the press peoples, regionally and from around the world. This is the Midwest Indie Media Center radio podcast. Welcome everybody. This is Zach Wright here at the Midwest Indie Media Radio Studios, and you are listening to the Midwest Indie Media Radio Show, featuring me once again, Zach Wright. Here on the show, we usually feature some of the best in independent underground hip hop, as well as news and views of the press peoples from around the world. All right, and I'd like to give a big ups to all those who have downloaded this radio show via WJM or Midwest Indie Media Radio Podcast. I also like to big ups Berkeley Liberation Radio for their support in broadcasting this fine radio program, and any and all other radio stations who are currently broadcasting the Midwest Indie Media Radio Show. And boy, we have a great show for you guys today. Studios located here on the west side of Cleveland, Ohio. Oh yes. And for all those who know about Ohio, you guys should know that we have a lot of people here in Ohio who, or more say, a lot of rich people who live in Ohio, who have second homes in Miami. And that's where our first bit of news has come from today. 100 protests at U.S. Southern Command headquarters to shut down the SOA and end Honduras coup. This comes to Miami IMC. This year's action has been the main messages: shut down the SOA, no fleets, no bases, and end the coup in Honduras. On a hill overlooking Southcom, speakers for the event focused on those topics. They were joined by three powerful songs, including one, Close the SOA. Following this rally, we conducted a funeral march to the main gate of Southcom, where we stood in solidarity with all those who fight for justice in South and Central America, with a special focus on resistance in Honduras, which is fighting to return democracy to the victims of the coup in Honduras. CIW members made clear the connection between the SOA and their struggles in South Florida. Many of these workers were driven from their homes, from land held by their families for generations by militaries trained at the SOA. Upon learning of this connection, many participants in the SOA watch action were moved to go out to the public on West Fagler to join the CIW in their struggle for a dignity, a living wage, and to end slavery in the fields. This season will see a special focus on Southcom for a number of reasons. First, the prison / torture camp at the Guantanamo, directed out of Southcom, is still open and functioning. Second, this march marks the 30th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero of El Salvador for graduates of the SOA, carried out with the knowledge of Southcom. And finally, Southcom will be the command and control facility for the new 4th Fleet that is being deployed to the region, as well as U.S. military bases in the area, which including the 7 new bases in Colombia. This military base presence and military presence is inherently a threat, is intolerable. The success of yesterday's event at Southcom will be shared with resistance in Honduras, which this evening, by conference call, know that these efforts are valued by those struggling for justice throughout Latin America. Let it be known that on Sunday, November 8, 2009, at 1 p.m., at the U.S. Southern Command, we stood witness to the dead that died at the hands of SOA graduates we call Presente. We are here. When their names were read, this year we read 19 new names, the names of those who were killed opposing the coup in Honduras. Now I'm going to read these names, and here are they. Pedro Magdiel Salvador Munoz, Roger Abraham Vallejo Soriano, Wendy Elizabeth Avila, Jacob Equera, Francisco Alvarado, Olga Osiris Ucles, Haro Sanchez, Pedro Pablo Hernandez, Isis Obed Murillo Mencias, Felix Orlando Murillo Lopez, Maria Fidelio Contreras Mercada, Ramon Garcia, Juan Gabriel Figueroa Tome, Roger Bados, Alicio Hernandez Juarez, Juan Nathan Osorio, Mateo Antonio Lavia, Anastasio Barrera, Gabriel Fino Noriega. We will continue to stand in solidarity with those who are resisting the coup in Honduras, for the struggle is our struggle. We will also continue to stand with all the people of Latin America and the Caribbean who feel the oppression of the U.S. imperialism and the economic injustice of multinational corporations. Close the School of America's U.S. military out of the Latin America in the coup. For more information, go to SOA Watch at http://www.soaw.org. That is www.soaw.org. All right. And also, we have a bit more news on the healthcare bill that's passed by House fails to deliver real reform. In a narrow late-night victory on November 7th, House Democrats and one lone Republican passed a healthcare reform bill by a margin of 220 to 215. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi compared passage of the bill to establishment of the Social Security Act in 1935 and the Medicare Act in 1965. Central elements of Affordable Health Care for America Act include a mandate for those Americans to purchase health insurance with the provision of subsidies. It prohibits insurers from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions, caps the financial responsibility of insured individuals faced with serious illness and medical emergencies, and prevents insurance companies from abandoning policyholders when they get sick. The measure includes a public health insurance option that would be required to negotiate with providers, as opposed to more cost-saving position of reimbursing providers using Medicare rates. As advertised, the bill would cover 36 million uninsured Americans at a cost of just under $900 billion over 10 years. A controversial amendment added to the bill that prohibits federal funds from being spent for abortion services within a public option and insurance exchange is examined later in this program. The debate now moves to the U.S. Senate, where any health reform bill passed there must be merged with the House version. Donna Smith is a community organizer and legislative advocate for the California Nurses Association. She and her husband were profiled in Michael Moore's documentary film, Sicko, which examined the urgent need for U.S. health care reform. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Smith about why she believes the recently passed House reform legislation falls far short of what the country needs to provide citizens with comprehensive quality care and control skyrocketing costs. Call the California Nurses Association at 510 273-2200 or visit the website at www.guaranteedhealthcare.org. And at the moment, I'm going to stop right there. And I do have some headlining news that I will be getting into just a little bit later today. Oh, yes. This is some big news for all those who just don't know. Well, apparently, the feds were after IndyMedia.us. They've been wanting the IP addresses of all the visitors who checked the website. So if you went to IndyMedia.us, they're trying to come after you too. Or at least want to know if you were on the website. Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. That'll be your headlining news for today. We'll get into that much, much later into the program. Right now, you're listening to the Midwest Indie Media Radio Show with Zach Riot. Broadcasted here in the west side of Cleveland, Ohio.
This is the water for your private mind guarded. Cause the seeds need nourishment in this world so harsh, beg your pardon. Revolution I'm sparking, speaking from the heart, resurrecting this music out of the coffin. These dudes really got some guard though, to ever go against this coolest home and thought flow. True to the cause, the news is false, use the pause progression. No wonder so many lost with the ignorance infection. But even if we get slept on like Tempur-Pedics, I'ma still ring the alarm cause y'all need it. When kids putting street cred on visas like it's part of procedure to keep them dependent, vision limited. So they can't see the endless horizon. That's why we organize grassroots with the hustle, only way to survive. So if you claiming you fly, peep it, I'm the windshield. And I don't rock first, but I can make your chin chill. He longed for the time the veil would be lifted. Known as an outsider, but inside knew he was gifted. Fighting for a chance to be seen or heard. Mind open from lighting up the earth. Cause the way that they up the stakes, 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 got me up. 25-8, no time to be late. When they playing with your mind and fate, it's time to up the stakes. And we can do anything that we dream of. But the way that we've been broken down, it's like we seem stuck. Psychologically beaten up, the thermostat's heating up. So it's time we bout to let go of the fear and speak up. This is for the slaves who don't know that they slaves. Cause over time society told them how to behave, how to dress, how to work, how to eat, how to pray, how to talk behind your back and then smile in your face. I'm thinking about my future but living for today. That's why I hustle from Monday through Sunday. Any coward can shoot from a distance, so fuck your gun. Play whatever happened, they're shooting a fair one way. A lot of rappers think they're sick as hypochondriacs, but when I meet them, can't give proper contact. I guess the truth is blinding. See, this world's run by real thugs, and when they say believe in God, they mean gold, oil, and drugs. He longed for the time the veil would be lifted. Known as an outsider, but inside knew he was gifted. Fighting for a chance to be seen or heard. Mind open from lighting up the earth. Cause the way that they up the stakes, 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 got me up 25-8. No time to be late. When they playing with your mind and fate, it's time to up the stakes. We'll be in turn to cannon fodder, treated like puppets, worse than M&N otter for amusement. Better lose until the conclusion is otter than a Twilight Zone saga. My life was a poem and Jaws the author. Through institutions we've been brought up to conform to confusion. Fair drama, reality shows and soap operas. It's like a full-time job for a black man living in a system that they don't want him a part of. Conditioned by conditioning, but the beautiful thing is that we overcome every obstacle. Many ancestors proved it was possible. So fuck the objections, fuck the fixed elections, and fuck the system keeping innocent citizens in prison settlements. No more will we be hesitant, an
And if you ain't feeling the direction we're going in, make them feel your presence. It's all God's essence, so let's manifest it.
He longed for the time the veil would be lifted. Known as an outsider, but inside knew he was gifted. Fighting for a chance to be seen or heard. Mind open from lighting up the earth. Cause the way that they up the stakes, that they up the stakes, that they up the stakes, that they up the stakes. Got me up 25-8, no time to be late. When they playing with your mind and fate, it's time to up the stakes.
I was never the wild-eyed type style, Mokilo, not the okey-doke Negro. Nah. A soul baby full-grown with a long way to go in the game. Puffin' as a scene Nirvana like Cobain. But I'm so grateful, got love out of playful. Giving you food for thought, cause when you're hungry, you gotta make do. I dare anyone to knock me off of my square. Come no on. Jewelry but the shine from my mind, I have you impaired. Every day I rise into the sky, I stare. Like, hey God, you there? We struggling down here. I just wanna fly away from the trouble, cause we ain't getting no younger. Understand I got a plan for the come yep. up. Don't run up, we practice battle tactics from sundown to sunup. Yeah, you know how we roll. This game is infested with phony Montanas and half-ass Ninos. But really don't know the time like Las Vegas casinos.
Whatever you want me to do.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to say.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to be.
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so that. Whatever you want me to do.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to say.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to be.
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so.
I'm so fresh and I'm so clean. I drop jewels, meaning my words gleam under the spotlights. Rocking you not right, sitting you sideways. Giving you that gangster lean on the scene. I swear it runs in the jeans, like the seams in the denim on the pockets where I stash my green. It would seem that I keep it the nicest. Truth in my name, knowledge my game, aim with preciseness. Body and face in the ciphers, leaving them lifeless. Live American graffiti like Richard Dreyfuss. I mastered my cards, so now my diction is priceless. Cats teething on it, they bite this. Instead they trying to be like Mike is. Jumpman hanging over their heads like a light switch. Word, I'm illmatically born. God's son, second edition in different physical form. Tell me I'm wrong.
Whatever you want me to do.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to say.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to be.
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so that. Whatever you want me to do.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to say.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to be.
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so
happy to be here, but not surprised that I am. I make miracles appear with the stroke of my hand. No, not your baby brother, but compared to any other.
What?
Compared to any buster, I'm the best in all the land. Fly and jigged out, colors I pick, cloud the mind and inhibition. The chicks I'm about to dig out, my shoes are not creased. And the people all agree, he got the freshest kicks out, I match them to the teeth. Genius to write this, seamless and frightless. But no one really questions when I deem this the hypeness. I'm eating everything on my plate, your beef is my steak. I rhyme great, yo, every line is mindless. Close to blowing up,
blowing
I'm probably glowing some. Slight radioactivity, only a show a month. But if I'm kicked back, bumping an Amtrak, then I'm just loading up, cause E&J is focused, son.
Whatever you want me to do.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to say.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to be.
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so,
I'm so that. Whatever you want me to do.
Whatever.
Whatever you want me to say.
say
whatever,
whatever you want me to be.
I'm so.
Just check the record and you will know that I'm so. Everything that I say, everything that I am, I'm so that, yeah. And just know that she is.
All right, you're listening to the Midwest Indie Media Radio with Zach Wright. I'm your host, and we're here back here on the show. I played a couple of tracks. One of my favorite artists. I just happen to really be digging. His name is Simply Ant, and I'm just totally feeling his tracks all the way. It's all about that jazzy hip hop, in my opinion. That's what I like to play here on this show. And I'd like to thank all those who are listening and or supporting this radio show and all the stations that are broadcasting this phenomenal show known to you as the Midwest Indie Media Radio. Broadcasted from the Midwest Indie Media Radio Center. And back here, for all those who just tuned in, got a little special announcement. The feds are after the indie media by trying to get all those who are visiting the site's IP address. That's our main story, and we're going to get into that a little bit later on in this program. I know I've been promising you guys, I really want you guys to stay locked and listen to this. And the news I'm offering for you is going to be part one of probably maybe a 2 or 3 part series on the feds trying to basically find out who is going on to the Indie Media website. That is the indiemedia.us website, to be exact. Again, that's our main story. But first, before I even get to that, I would like to move along and basically get into a U.S. black leader whose name is Omali Yeshitila, who is basically, he traveled to Sierra Leone for a historic conference. Omali Yeshitila is a leader of the Uhuru Movement and chair of the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations, is traveling with a delegation to Freetown, Sierra Leone, November 13th. Yeshitila will be an observer and speaker at the historic launch of the African People's Socialist Party in West Africa. Now, a lot of you guys are wondering, what is the Uhuru Movement that he is leading? I happen to take the time to go along to Wikipedia, and I got this definition of the Uhuru Movement. The Uhuru Movement is a group of organizations under the principle of African internationalism, or the liberation of Africans in both the continent of Africa and in African diaspora. Uhuru is the Swahili word for freedom. The movement is led by Omali Yeshitila's African People's Socialist Party, or known as the APSP. The APSP has formed several organizations, each with specific tasks and purpose. Affiliated with organizations include the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, the African Socialist International, Running with the Spears, African People's Solidarity Committee, the African Lieutenant Uhuru's, and Burning Spear Productions, as well as others. The organization came to national attention during the 2008 presidential campaign season when several Uhuru members interrupted a Barack Obama town hall meeting in St. Petersburg, Florida. They shouted slogans at Obama and held up a banner which read, "What about the black community, Obama?" Later during the meeting, Diop Buba Olugagbala, an organizer within the group, questioned the candidate and alleged that he was not speaking out for African Americans on issues like police brutality, predatory lending, and Hurricane Katrina. The Uhuru movement held a political rally outside the event to protest Obama. And on March 25th of 2009, the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement organized a march in support of Lavelle Mixon, an Oakland, California web resident who killed four Oakland police officers after a routine traffic stop. So says the Wikipedia. Now, according to our reports here, is that Yeshitila is making his trip just days after successful Black is Back led march in Washington, D.C. on November 7th. Several hundred people joined the march, which called for an end to U.S. wars and occupations against oppressed peoples around the world and inside the U.S. Now, those of you who've listened to our previous radio show / podcast, courtesy of the Midwest Indie Media Radio that I just did not too long ago, I basically was announced the news on the Black is Back movement, calling Barack Obama a white face in the body of a black person. And basically, a lot of people were protesting Barack Obama, especially for his reasons for being a warmonger and also alienating his black community. I mean, a lot of people voted for Barack Obama because we were hoping that maybe, at least we'll have one president in the United States of America who could be for minorities and just simple working Americans. I mean, our crisis on the financial economy has been distraught because of greedy individuals here in this country. You know, these high elitists, if you will. Well, further reading on, as the chairman of the worldwide organization known as the African Socialist International, Yeshitila will be hosted by former child soldier, journalist, and activist Chinua Alpha Mba, leader of the Africanist movement of Sierra Leone, which has now voted to become the African People's Socialist Party, Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone is one of the most impoverished countries in the world, even though it produces some of the planet's largest and most beautiful diamonds. The country was ravaged in the late 90s by an internal war backed by foreign interests for control over the country's resources. The launch of the African People's Socialist Party in Sierra Leone marks the first officially registered political party led by a benefiting masses of African workers and peasants in Sierra Leone's history. Some of the themes of the conference will be One Africa, One Nation, and Africa's Resource for African People. Yeshitila and his delegation will be in Sierra Leone for 13 days of events that include the African People's Socialist Party founding conference November 16th through the 18th. Other scheduled activities include the gala launching of the Olusharu Community Fishing Project and the opening of the Africa's first community-owned radio station in the town of McKinney. Yeshitila will also give a lecture to the students at Fora Bay College in Freetown. Yeshitila's delegation includes black leaders and activists from the U.S. and Britain, as well as white supporters of these historic events. And speaking of Barack Obama, I have some news from Infowars.net about the Nobel Peace Laureate Obama will send 40,000 more troops to war. Nobel Peace Prize winner Barack Obama has decided to send close to 40,000 more troops into Afghanistan over the course of 2010, according to insiders. Nobel Peace Laureate Obama will send 40,000 more troops to war. Pointless will he, won't he, debates ignore the fact that Obama has already deployed 30,000 additional troops to Afghanistan. Informed sources tell CBS News that he tends to give General McChrystal most, if not all, the additional troops he is asking for, the network reported Monday night. According to the report, Obama has decided to send four combat brigades plus thousands more support troops, bringing the total of new troops to be deployed close to 40,000. The first troops will arrive in early 2010, and it will take until the end of 2010 before all additional troops were in position. The buildup is expected to last 4 years, meaning there will be 100,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan by the end of 2012, when Obama has completed his first term. According to CBS, Obama will announce the decision the week before Thanksgiving, just in time to fly over to Oslo, Norway in December to pick up his Nobel Peace Prize. The White House denied that any decision has been made, calling the reports absolutely false. Of course, the news is not surprising, while the mainstream media is still pointlessly debating, will he, won't he? The decision to deploy thousands more troops was made back in February, when the announcement that 17,000 rising to 30,000 troops will be sent into the country. Now, at the same time, Obama demanded a total of around $800 billion in war funds and subsidiary costs. According to the U.S. defense officials, Obama needs about $75.5 billion for 2009 to cover the costs of additional troops deployed to Afghanistan this year, and another $130 billion for the rest of the fiscal 2009, reports from 9 months ago have highlighted. Also, in addition, the chairman of Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mike Mullen, has made it clear that the Pentagon will request supplemental war fighting funds sometime next year over and above $130 billion appropriated by Congress last month. The combined number of troops in Iraq and Afghanistan have now reached a higher level under Obama than existed under the Bush administration at any point between 2003 and 2008. At the height of the Bush administration's 2007 surge in Iraq, there were 26,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan and 160,000 in Iraq, and a total of 186,000 troops. According to the DOD figures cited by Washington Post last month, there are now around 189,000 and rising deployed in total. There are now 68,000 troops in Afghanistan, over double the amount deployed there when Bush left office. As the Post points out, these figures are also misleadingly low because the number of support troops, at least 13,000, has simply not been announced or noted despite their authorization and deployment by the Pentagon. The deployment of the support troops to Afghanistan brings the total increase approved by Obama to 34,000, the Post have noted. McChrystal's request with what the administration is considering would be in addition to the troops Obama has approved. The article continues that these numbers will no doubt go even further, given that McChrystal's top end request for additional troops to Afghanistan stands at 80,000, even more young Americans are to be pushed through the meat grinder. Shall we continue to debate whether or not Obama the Peace Laureate will increase troops levels in Afghanistan? In addition, it will become clear that as in Iraq, Obama intends for US forces to stay in Afghanistan permanently. One needs only to look at the recent headlines regarding construction and infrastructure contracts to recognize this fact. As Walter Pincus of the Washington Post notes, the Pentagon spent roughly $2.7 billion on construction over appropriations bill, which will send another $1.3 billion or more than 100 projects at 40 sites across the country, according to a Senate report on legislation. Just as in Iraq, the Pentagon is setting about building hundreds of huge permanent military bases, expanding the sprawling network of well over 700 bases worldwide, read journalist Nick Turse's in-depth report for more analysis. Now, just as in Iraq, tens of thousands of U.S. troops will remain in Afghanistan as a residual. Now, let's not forget that justification for escalating the war in Afghanistan is to fight Al-Qaeda insurgents and prevent another 9/11, a notion that has no basis in reality, given that even if you believe in the official story of 9/11, no Afghans were involved in attacks which were planned by Saudi nationals in Europe. Furthermore, high-ranked U.S. security and military officials openly stated that Afghanistan is not in danger of falling, and that there were less than 100 Al-Qaeda affiliate fighters currently in the country, presenting no threat to any nation. Should 40,000 additional troops enter the country, there will be 1,000 more U.S. soldiers and Marines in Afghanistan for every Al-Qaeda fighter. The real reason for military escalation is to dominate the geopolitical region, reap the financial profits from the plentiful supplies of energy and narcotics, and suppress the people of Afghanistan in the process. Barack Obama's election promised to bring change to Washington and reverse the juggernaut of rampant militarism. Endless wars and occupation has proven to be nothing more than cruel hoax. Perpetuation of the illegal occupation of Iraq, the expansion of fallacy-based war in Afghanistan, as well as the increased faceless attacks in Pakistan, heightened belligerence towards Iran and refusal to address a strategy to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict sum up Obama's foreign policy during his first 12 months in office. I want to know how in anyone's mind can such behavior constitute a move towards peace? And if you want links on more facts on this, you can go to www.prisonplanet.com. And actually what I'm going to do is, I'm a little bit tongue twisted, as some of you guys can tell, so dude, I got to take a break. That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a break. And we're going to get into a bit of news from Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. Because basically, Mumia is set to be executed very soon. And this is depending on upcoming court rulings. Him, among two other guys, are supposed to be executed. And I will be reporting more on this after the break. You're listening to Midwest Intermediate Radio featuring Zach Riot.
Fresh dough follow Esco and was getting baits. Can't forget the waves. 360 that. Summertime, it was your white tees and fitted hats with the kicks to match. Cause niggas know I'm right, but in the mix of that, yo, that's when I started flowing tight. That's who I was running with, kept me on punishment. That's when the bar monster became harsher and was loving it. Nice to reminisce, but the future is the farthest truth. So I'ma construct songs, start to starve within the booth. Purple tape, 36 chamber truth, as well as club tapes. And the bad boys dumping off what's the one, what we doing. So this is what we doing. I'm here to take it back one time.
One time.
What, one, two, microphone check, boom. Let's take it to the top, one round.
One round.
We used to get dressed in your favorite. We sure we had nobody to play with. Hey, one.
Chad Butler, known as Pimp C, died in a Los Angeles hotel room. The LA County Coroner's Office ruled the rapper's death accidental and attributed to a combination of
apnea and syrup. And we know that syrup on the streets usually has codeine.
Absolutely. We have a problem now with the cough syrup epidemic.
He rolled up, asked him what he was sipping on. Said lean. You wanna hit it, dog? That's the same stuff Weezy sipping, huh? And tons of other rappers that be spitting hard. Yep, he had five up bone. Then went and passed him that styrofoam. The Easter Pink heard a rhyme before. Finally got to see what all the hype was on. And then he took a sip, sitting in the Lincoln, thinking he was pipping as he listened to the system. Little did he know that it was just as addictive as bass. Not the kind of hit from the kick drum. Hot box, let the bass bump. Take it to the face, gulp. Months later, the use went up, and every blunt was accompanied by the pink stuff. But goddamn, he loved that feeling. Purple rain coated in the throat, just so healing. Medicine alleviate the sickness, liquid to fix him. It comes with the cost. Wake up, cold sweat, scratching, itching, trying to escape the skin that barely fit him. Gone, get another bottle just to get a couple swallows. Headed towards the bottom, couldn't get off it. Didn't even think he had a problem, though we couldn't sleep without getting nauseous. Room spinning, thinking he might have sipped just a little bit too much of that cough syrup. His eyelids closed shut. Sat back in the chair clutching that cup. Girlfriend came and a couple hours later said his name shook him, but he never got up. He never got up. He never got up. We live on the cusp of death, thinking that it won't be us. It won't be us. It won't be us. It won't be us. Nah, it won't be us. Wanted to act like them. He just wanted to rap like him. Us as rappers underestimate the power and the effects that we have on these kids. Blunt past, ash in the tin, pack being pushed, harassed by the feds. The fact of it is, most people that rap like this talking about some shit they haven't lived. Surprise, you know the drill. Trapped in a box, decline record sales. Follow the formula, violence, drugs, and sex sells. So we try to sound like someone else. This is not Californication. There's no way to glorify this pavement. Syrup, Percocet, hit an eighth a day will leave you broke, depressed, and emotionally vacant. Despite how little Wayne lives, it's not conducive to being creative. And I know cause he's my favorite. And I know cause I was off that same mix. Rationalize the shit that I try after I listen to Dedication. But he's an alien. I'd sip that shit, pass out and play PlayStation. Months later I'm in the same place. No music made, feeling like a failure. And trust me, it's not dope to be 25 and move back to your parents' basement. I seen my people's dreams die. I seen what they can be denied. And weed's not a drug that's denial. Groundhog Day life repeat each time. I seen Oxycontin take three lives. I grew up with them, we used to cheat dimes. I seen cocaine bring out the demons inside. Cheating in line, friendship cease, no peace in the mind. Stealing and take anything to fix the pieces inside. Broken, hopeless, headed nowhere. Only motivation for what the dealer's supplying. That rush, that drug, that dope. Those pills, that crumb, that roach. Thinking I will never do that, not that drug. Growing up, nobody ever does. Until you're stuck, looking in the mirror like I can't believe what I become. So I was gonna be someone, and growing up everyone always does. We sell our dreams and our potential to escape through that buzz. Just keep me up, Hollywood, here we come.
You can't tend to go a little too far with some of these things. They have very strong addictive qualities, pills and syrups and whatnot. So,
is it changing the music?
I can only speak for myself personally. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We had been taking down, toning down the content of certain things in the music lately. My new album, of course, probably won't have any references to Cough Syrup in it, but, a little bit more than the music, I think it's going to start affecting the personal lives of a lot of artists and people.
Welcome back to the Midwest Indie Media Radio. This is Zach Wright, and I'm back here after playing a couple of tracks. I want to get into this story, quick story about Mumia Abdul-Jamal and a couple of other who are going to be executed. I'm going to get into this real quickly, because I still have to get into our final bit of news, which is on the feds keeping a close eye on the indiemedia.us website. And moving on, we demand a civil rights investigation for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Laura Moy, the director of Amnesty International's death penalty abolition campaign, spoke about Troy Davis, and Moy will also be speaking on behalf of Amnesty International at the Washington D.C. press conference at the U.S. Department on November 2nd. Activist Rebecca Doran spoke about Kevin Cooper, and his video footage of the presentations by Moy and Doran will be released shortly, so please stay tuned. Speaking about Mumia Abdul-Jamal was Hassan Bennett, co-founder of Journalists for Mumia and author of the new pamphlet published by Mobilization to Free Mumia entitled The Case of Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Innocent Man on Death Row. The pamphlet features the June 16, 2009 San Francisco Bayview newspaper article by Bennett that cites several instances of withheld evidence and argues for a federal civil rights investigation into Mumia's case. The pamphlet also features the diagrams and ballistics and analysis presented in the New Journalist for Mumia flyer explaining why the prosecution scenario used to convict Mumia is ballistically impossible. Bennett also spoke about the current legal situation where the U.S. Supreme Court has yet to rule on the DA's attempt to execute Mumia without having a new sentencing phase trial where evidence of innocence can be presented, but a jury can only choose between execution or life in prison without parole. On October 13th, the U.S. Supreme Court heard an oral argument for a separate case that also involves the Mills issue, which is central to Philadelphia DA's appeal. The court's upcoming ruling on this separate Spisak case may impact the DA's appeal. This segment is featured in the second video being released. An official update from Mumia's legal team has also been released by lead attorney Robert B. Bryan. A recent article by Jeff Mackler also focuses on seriousness of the current legal situation. And you can check out that and more via www.indiemedia.us. Indiemedia.us. And I'm just being real brief on this because we're going to have to close out the show very shortly, and we're leading up to our final bit of news. But once again, I'd like to send condolences to Mumia Abdul-Jamal. And I am Personally, I'm hoping that they don't execute him. I find him innocent. I mean, if it's my opinion, I really think they should just free this guy. I mean, if you didn't do something, then, and the courts can't prove that you did it, why should they keep you in prison? Or why should they execute you in that manner? But yeah, like I said, condolences to Mamiya Abdul-Jabbar. Speaking of the IndieMedia.us website, this bit of news actually comes courtesy of CBSNews.com. Surprisingly. And it says that the Justice Department has asked for news sites' visitor lists in case that raises questions about online journalism and privacy rights. The U.S. Department of Justice sent a formal request to an independent news site ordering it to provide details of all readers on a certain day. The grand jury subpoena also requires Philadelphia-based IndieMedia.us website not to disclose existence of this request unless authorized by Justice Department, a gag order that presents an unusual quandary for any news organization. Christina Clare, a 34-year-old Linux administrator living in Philadelphia who provides free service space for IndieMedia.us, said she was shocked to receive the Justice Department's subpoena. The Independent Media Center is a left-of-center amalgamation of journalists and advocates that, according to their principles of unity and mission statement, work toward promoting social, economic justice, and social change. The subpoena, which is actually in PDF format, for those who want to view this, from U.S. Attorney Tim Morrison in Indianapolis, demanded all IP traffic to and from www.indiemedia.us on June 25th, 2008. It instructed Claire to include IP addresses, times, and any other identifying information, including email addresses, physical addresses, registered accounts, and IndieMedia readers, social security numbers, bank account numbers, credit card numbers, and so on. I want to add that this is very, very shocking news, even to someone like myself, who is a regular reader, and I do get a lot of my news sources that I announce here on the Midwest Indie Media radio program, courtesy of the Cleveland or the IndieMedia.us website. Due to our Cleveland Indie Media website, it's has been updating for a while. But anywho, reading on from the CBSNews.com, quote, "I did not think anything we were doing was worthy of any federal attention," Claire said in a telephone interview with CBSNews.com on Monday. After talking to other IndieMedia volunteers, Claire ended up calling the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco, which represented her at no cost. Under long-standing Justice Department guidelines, subpoenas to members of the news media are supposed to receive special treatment. One portion of the guidelines, for instance, says that no subpoena may be issued to any member of the news media without the express authorization of the Attorney General, which would be current Attorney General Eric Holder, and subpoena should be directed a material information regarding a limited subject matter. Still unclear is what criminal investigation U.S. Attorney Morrison was pursuing last Friday. A spokeswoman initially promised a response, but Morrison sent an email on Monday evening saying that we have no comment. The Justice Department in Washington, D.C. also declined to respond. Now, Kevin Bankston, a senior staff attorney at the San Francisco-based Electronic Frontier Foundation, replied to the Justice Department on behalf of his client in a February 2009 letter outlining what he described as a series of problems with the subpoena, including that it was not personally served, that a judge-issued court order would be required for the full logs, that Indie Media did not store logs in the first place. Morrison replied in a one-sentence letter saying that the subpoena had been withdrawn around the same time. According to the EFF, the group had a series of discussions with the assistant U.S. attorneys in Morrison's office who threatened Claire with possible prosecution for obstruction of justice, which she disclosed the existence of the already withdrawn subpoena, claiming it may endanger someone's health and would have a human cost. Lucy Daglish, the executive director of the Reporters Committee to the Freedom of the Press, said a gag order to a news organization wouldn't stand up in court. If you get a subpoena and you're a journalist, they can't gag you. Daglish said that a subpoena being issued and withdrawn is not unprecedented. I have seen in a number of these things withdrawn when counsel for someone who is claiming a reporter's privilege says, quote, can you tell me the date you got approval from the Attorney General's office? I'm willing to chalk this up to bad lawyering on the part of the DOG and just not thinking, end of quote, said Daglish. Making this investigation more mysterious is that IndieMedia.us is an aggregation site, meaning articles that appear on it were published somewhere else first. There's no hints about what sparked the criminal probe. The Claire Systems Administration says that no IP, the Internet Protocol addresses, is recorded to IndieMedia.us, and non-IP address logs are kept for a few weeks and then discarded. The EFF's Bankston wrote a second letter to the government saying that if it needed to muzzle IndieMedia, it should apply for a gag order under the section of federal law that clearly permits such order to be issued. Bankston's plan to challenge that law on First Amendment grounds. But the Justice Department never replied. Quote, this is the first time we've seen them to try to get the IP address of everyone who visited a particular site, Bankston said. This was a news organization that was additional trouble. Additional troubling fact that implicates First Amendment rights. This is not, however, the first time that the feds have focused on IndieMedia, a website whose authors sometimes blur the line between journalism, advocacy, and on-the-streets activism. In 2004, the Justice Department sent a grand jury subpoena asking for information about who posted lists of Republican delegates while urging they be given an unwelcome reception at the party's convention in the New York City that year. A IndieMedia hosting service in Texas once received a subpoena asking for server logs in relation to an investigation of an attempted murder in Italy. Bankston has written a long description of exchange of letters with the Justice Department, which he hopes will raise awareness of how others should respond to similar legal commands for web logs, customer records, and compulsory silence. Quote, our fear is that this kind of bogus gag order is much more common than one would hope, considering that they're legally baseless, end of quote, Bankston says. Bankston also says that we're telling this story in hopes that more providers will press back and go public when the government demands their silence. And, of course, that came courtesy of CBSNews.com. And check this out. Go to IndieMedia.us. And no, they will not give up your IP address. That is basically the ending of this program. Once again, I want to send condolences to Mumia Abdul-Jamal and all who are on death row awaiting execution. I want to give a big shout out to the Rust Belt Radio, Pittsburgh's Indie Media, which is also part of our chapters in the Midwest, Indie Media. And I want to also give a big ups to all Indie Media across the globe and also here in the United States. This is Zach Riot at the Midwest Indie Media Center Radio. Up the Rebels, I'm out.